From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Bill Clinton, it seems, is not ready to slip quietly into the American background. Not yet. Since leaving office, the former president has assumed the mantles of AIDS spokesperson, dapper man about New York, and maybe, soon, syndicated afternoon television talk show host. Interviewing America's movers and shakers for the hoi polloi might be exactly the right role for the emotive man famous for balancing politics with celebrity schmooze. Bill Clinton always waltzed effortlessly between State Department briefings and Hollywood who's who parties. But is the country ready for Bill Clinton Oprah style? At 56, the young ex-president still has plenty of time to share with America. How should he use it? Tonight on Point, the Bill Clinton Factor. We begin with a look at what Bill Clinton's been up to lately. Joe Connison joins us. He's a columnist for the New York Observer and Salon.com and a longtime Clinton watcher. Good evening and welcome, Joe Connison.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Joe, catch us up, if you would, on just exactly what Bill Clinton's been doing since he left the presidency. We know he's been giving speeches. He's signed what's reportedly the biggest book advance in history for a memoir. Where does he live? Where does he spend his time? How much has he been working?
Well, his book is a bit late at this point.
Missing a deadline or two.
He may miss the deadline. He hasn't. I don't think he's missed it yet, but he may.
With $12 million advance riding on it, reportedly, they're going to be caring about that.
They gave him that much money to begin with. I think they're probably willing to wait a bit for the book. Mm-hmm. He's not the first author to be late with the book, but he has been traveling a great deal, as everybody knows, giving speeches. He spent quite a bit of time in Africa and was at the International AIDS Conference in Barcelona. He's very active in AIDS work with Nelson Mandela and with his former ambassador to the UN, Richard Holbrooke. He lives in Chappaqua, in the home that he and Hillary bought when she decided to run for the Senate in New York. And he is working out of his office in Harlem. He's Hillary's press secretary just went to work as his sort of chief of staff up there, Jim Kennedy. So I think he's planning to be there more now.
Is he a presence around New York, Joe? Does he show up at glittering events or weighty councils?
Well, I haven't run into him much. The last time I saw him was at a party at Christmas time, a very big party for Ann Richards, the former governor of Texas who has moved to New York. And Clinton showed up there along with just everybody from Victoria Gotti to Harvey Weinstein. Right now, I believe he's in Martha's Vineyard on vacation.
A favorite spot.
He's around New York quite a bit.
He has reportedly earned as much as $15 million a year in speaking fees. How much speaking does that require?
Well, he gets, you know, up to something like, I actually shouldn't quote a figure, but my understanding is he gets very large speaking fees, upwards of $50,000 a piece. So you could.
That's still a lot of speeches.
that would be at least 30 speeches a year, but I think he gets even more for some of them. Mm-hmm. But it's a busy schedule.
Mm-hmm. And how about the amount of time and attention that he has for Hillary and she for him with her busy schedule and him traveling and flying? Do they spend much time together? Are they tight?
Well, you know, you're getting into areas that I'm not really qualified to address, but my understanding is that they speak very frequently. They are in the vineyard together this week. Mm-hmm. I happen to be talking to you from Nantucket, so everybody here is conscious that they're over there.
Just across the way.
Yeah. You know, during her campaign, which I covered and which we covered at The Observer, it was pretty clear that they were talking, you know, up to six or seven times a day, and that he was really, really involved with that.
That he was very involved as a political advisor, a campaign advisor.
Yes. He helped her make one of the bigger mistakes of the campaign, but I think a lot of his advice was probably very helpful to her. And there's obviously a close relationship there.
And Joe, what about Bill Clinton's wider circle of post-presidential friends? Who does he hang out with?
Well, I think he's in close touch with a lot of the people who used to work with him. As I said, you know, he's involved with Holbrooke's work on AIDS and the Global AIDS Council. You know, the heads of state who were his friends back then, I think, are still in touch with him when he travels to England. You know, he sees Tony Blair. And I, you know, from what I know from his former aides in the White House, a lot of them still see him. he had a birthday party on the vineyard the other day when he turned 56, and there were about 40 people there, including folks like Vernon Jordan. So I think it's still pretty much the familiar circle around him.
And Joe, what's your sense? We know you don't live inside Bill Clinton's head, but what's your sense of this talk about
contrary
a potential
to popular opinion?
Yeah, does it make sense to you that his people would be talking with NBC before and now perhaps CBS about a television talk show role? Is this an ex-president who's still in search of his next act of what he will become now?
I think that's fair. I think he's been kind of scattered in his post-presidential years, although I think that probably happens to a lot of presidents when they first leave office. You know, it took a while for Jimmy Carter to get his bearings and decide what to do, and the others, you know, have gone on to sort of quieter existence as corporate directors, or, you know, the former President Bush ended up giving speeches for Sun Myung Moon, so they all have their ups and downs. But I think that Clinton is somebody who is keenly aware of the importance of the media in shaping the country's agenda. It was something that he understood, often to painful effect, when he was president. And I know that he has been thinking hard since he left office about how to intervene in that sphere in a way that, you know, shapes the country's politics in the direction that he thinks would be good for America.
And maybe, just maybe, this is the way. Joe, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Joe Connison is a columnist for the New York Observer and Salon.com. What do you think of the current Bill Clinton buzz? Is he starting to find his feet in his post-presidential years? What kind of player should Clinton be today on America's political scene? Does he still carry the weight to shape America's hearts and minds? Or has the country left Bill behind? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by John Orman and Daryl West, co-authors of the new book Celebrity Politics. John Orman is a professor of politics at Fairfield University and author of Presidential Accountability and Comparing Presidential Behavior. Daryl West is political science professor at Brown University and developer of the political information website InsidePolitics.com. Daryl West and John Orman, good evening and welcome to you both.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
Good evening.
Good evening. Also with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello, guests.
Daryl West, let me jump in with you, if I may. You just heard Joe Connison's take on the news about Bill Clinton potentially negotiating through third parties for a role as an afternoon television talk show host, reportedly, again, only reportedly, requesting a salary of $30 to $50 million a year. Leave the money aside for a moment. Is this the kind of role that makes sense for this ex-president?
Well, it's the kind of role that we're seeing much more frequently, because what the whole Clinton talk show host possibility represents is a blurring of the line between politics and entertainment. We've seen lots of Hollywood stars come into politics, run for office. We're now seeing a lot of politicians and former politicians go the other way, become political analysts, host television shows. And so it was only a matter of time before someone came up with the idea of Bill Clinton as a talk show host. It's actually a great role for him, given his communication skills.
John Orman, given that premise, and I know that is the premise in your book, does that suggest then that Bill Clinton would be stepping down to be an afternoon talk show host between ads for Prilosec and Downy, or that America's political culture has changed in such a way that that's an appropriate role for a former commander-in-chief?
I think it would represent the continuation of Bill Clinton being one of the most important celebrities in the United States. It would be a step up from the presidency in terms of pop culture awareness. Bill Clinton married electoral politics and celebrity stylistics during his 8 years. This would be probably a very appropriate way for him to continue his post-presidential years.
Jack Beattie, I want to bring you in on exactly that point. Can you picture Bill Clinton, afternoon talk show host, as being a step up from the presidency of the United States, even in an era of wide celebrity awareness and even power?
No, I can't see it as a step up. But I know what I'd like to see. I'd like to see Bill Clinton give this short little speech. Folks, I'm going to get $50 million a year for this job. And you know what? I get a really good pension. Plus, I get the $12 million from my book. I am sitting pretty. You know what I'm going to do with that $50 million? Mm-hmm. For as long as CBS will have me, that's going into an endowment fund for poor kids. And 100 years from now, kids will be going to college on that endowment. And you know what? That may be a bigger legacy than any achievement I had as a president.
Do you expect this speech, Jack Beatty?
Well, I think if he had any dignity, that's what he would do. I mean, when General Marshall retired, the Saturday Evening Post came to him and said, would you write your memoirs? He said, get out of my house. I didn't serve my country in war and peace so that I could tell it to the Saturday Evening Post. People used to have some dignity and some class, and I think he could make a tremendous gesture here. I mean, how much money can you have?
Darrell West, what about it? How do we think about ex-presidents these days, post-Bill Clinton, post-1990s, post-media saturation? How do we think about them and dignity and class and celebrity awareness as you have it all at the same time? Are dignity and class history?
Well, certainly we're seeing a change in what we expect from former presidents. What a lot of former presidents want is to somehow maintain a public voice, to speak out on issues they care about. Carter has done that through Habitat with Humanity, conflict resolution. There are a number of issues that he has been involved with. And Clinton essentially sees an opportunity in using the new media outlets, being a talk show host, for example, as a way to continue that public presence. So it's a way for him personally to be in the news, which is very important for him, but it's also a way for him to address issues that he cares about.
John Orman, you describe Bill Clinton as the ultimate celebrity president. What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, when he came to office during the campaign in 1992, he was one of the first people to use the new style of media. He was played saxophone on Arsenio Hall. He did talk shows with Phil Donahue. He kind of did a bypass of the mainstream media. And during his inauguration, we almost had 4 days of presidential ceremonies. We had the president welcoming Aretha Franklin and Barbara Streisand, and they had more celebrities than almost a People magazine awards show. And, of course, we had the Bill Clinton ties into the fundraising abilities to use the Lincoln bedroom and have some of his best friends from Hollywood show up.
But is that so different? Hasn't Elvis Presley came to visit Richard Nixon? I'm sure Joe DiMaggio made an appearance or two at the White House. Is it really so different what Bill Clinton did?
Yes, in terms of the magnitude and also the fundraising capabilities. Elvis did not give any money to Richard Nixon. The money that Bill Clinton would get from celebrities and also the power of the endorsement was very important to him. He loved to hang out with celebrities. In fact, the first couple of years, the White House Secret Service, his code name was Elvis. And so they would have fun whenever he'd leave the building. They'd say, Elvis has left the building. So he, in many ways that we try to explain in our book, he is almost the quintessential model of the celebrity president.
But Darrell West, can this work? The New York Times quotes an NBC executive where talks did not work out, saying that the Clinton people had suggested a talk show, but a weird talk show. They wanted a public affairs show, but there might be a band. Can you imagine a show put together that had a kind of mixture of public affairs and music and I don't know what all, something that would satisfy an afternoon television audience that would be fitting for a U.S. president, former?
Well, it sounds like a rather strange combination of C-SPAN and MTV. And so it really shows the difficulty of any type of niche. But, you know, Oprah Winfrey has really demonstrated that there is an audience in the afternoon for serious news as well as soft features. And Clinton is someone who could excel in either one of those types of formats. You know, he has the ability to take complex policy issues, bring them home in a way that ordinary people can understand and appreciate. But at the same time, he also has the communications abilities to do an Oprah-style interview of a celebrity or a world figure. So if there's anyone who could pull off the unusual combination that is being envisioned, it would be someone like Bill Clinton.
It's a little mind-boggling, but it might just work. Listeners, we're talking tonight about Bill Clinton and the remaking of a president. What do you want from Bill Clinton now? Something? Anything? Nothing? What kind of ex-president do you want Bill Clinton to be? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Bill Clinton Redux, about the remaking of a president. Our guests are John Orman and Daryl West. They're co-authors of the new book, Celebrity Politics. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. Can you see Bill Clinton as a new Oprah? Do you want to? How important, how powerful can Bill Clinton be, could he be, as a television celebrity, a television talk show host? What impact can, should William Jefferson Clinton have with the rest of his life? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. There's been a lot of talk about Bill Clinton, of course, ever since he came to the White House, and certainly since he left it. When he talked with NBC in May about this possibility, Mark Lewis wrote in Forbes magazine, "Ex-presidents are like ghosts who hang around after the funeral." He said, "If, like Clinton, they leave office while still relatively young, they face years of a twilight existence trapped in the dignity of their former office but shorn of its power. After writing his memoirs and building his library, Clinton will be left with little to do but sit around watching The West Wing and grumbling that he could play the part better than Martin Sheen." What do you think the president should do? Join us at 1-800-423-TALK. Jack Beatty, we hear your speech to the president, which is, okay, do it if you will, but take the $50 million and set up a trust fund for worthy Arkansas scholars. Still, we don't know if he'll do that, but if he should step into such a seat, can you imagine Bill Clinton wielding real political power from that kind of vantage, that kind of afternoon television microphone these days?
Well, yes, I can, partly on opinion, but partly, too, on his wife's behalf. In Perth, Australia, just recently, he was asked flat out, is Hillary Clinton running for president? And he said, this was his response, not in 2004.
So yes, and maybe sometime.
Yes, very clearly she's thinking of it, and there are all kinds of signs. She's giving money to congressional candidates. She's speaking to the DLC. She's taking a tough line on welfare moms, as Bill did. So she seemed to be positioning herself. And I can imagine him, not explicitly urging people to think about her, but basically drawing a picture of the ideal president. And lo and behold, it's Hillary.
Here she comes.
Here she comes.
That could be our Bill. We've got a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. We're talking about the remaking of a president, Bill Clinton Redux. Is Bill Clinton, his view, his mind, still a threat to the Republican Party, to George Bush? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Sarah's calling from Duluth, Minnesota. Welcome, Sarah. You're on the air.
Thank you. Actually, I find this really hopeful and exciting myself. I think Bill Clinton was elected because a lot of people were interested in the issues that he was interested in, health care for one. And I think a lot of that got undermined by the focus, especially in the second half. Well, and even earlier, by the Republicans just refusing to cooperate with almost anything he did, even before they found that glitch.
So you're ready, Sarah, to tune in and hear more of Bill Clinton, even if it's on an afternoon TV talk show.
Well, there's very little on there. There's very little available on the media besides public radio that discusses anything of any import except exactly the stuff that the current administration is focusing on. And frankly, there's so many other issues that are just, being dropped. So I have some high hopes for that. And on top of it, although, my family and so forth have always been Democrats and fairly supportive.
So there's a vote, yes. But Sarah, let me ask you this. Did you feel this same way a month, a week, 2 months after Bill Clinton left office? Had you had enough? Are you sort of warming back up to the idea?
Oh, I really never stopped liking Bill Clinton, even though I was very disappointed that his actions resulted in dropping the ball on so many important issues that I think he could have perhaps promoted a little more. And I also think he gave in too easily and too quickly for the sake of popularity. And yet, looking at all those faults, I see a lot of it, linked to the Republicans' just intense dislike and out to get him style. And so I've remained someone who likes Bill Clinton, even though I was disappointed in what happened, and partly because of what he did, and partly because of of several things besides the Monica thing. You know,
but you're ready to have him back. Sarah, thank you for your call. And there's a true believer and a voice ready to pick up the remote control and punch in Bill Clinton again. Daryl West, let me put the same question to you about the power that Bill Clinton could wield in that kind of Oprah-style setting. Would it be real political power? Would it even be threatening political power to, let's say, the Republican Party, George W.?
The power is purely a function of the audience. You know, if millions of people tune in, then that would make Bill Clinton very powerful. And I think what Sarah was talking about is there is still a market for ideas and people who know how to communicate ideas. But the thing that we would add based on our research is people aren't just going to listen to anybody sitting around talking about health care. Mm-hmm. Clinton has a particular cachet because he's famous, he's a celebrity, he's a former president. He has a kind of credibility that could make him very effective in this kind of role.
But will his lean toward politics, John Norman, let me throw this one to you, will it be a draw? I mean, he's reportedly asking for an enormous compensation, that the best rated political talk shows with real firebrand hosts like O'Reilly and Chris Matthews, have relatively small audiences compared to Oprah. Their annual salaries, I think O'Reilly's is $3.5 million, much different than what Bill Clinton's asking for. Can you have a policy-oriented talk show, even with Bill Clinton at its helm, that really brings in the millions and millions of viewers?
Well, I think it'd be worth the gamble. Bill Clinton also has a vested interest to try to get back into the political ball game. If you've noticed, over the last 6 months or so, the Republican Party has blamed the Clinton administration for the failure of 9/11, the intelligence failure. They blamed Clinton for the unregulated corporate greed that resulted in a number of large corporations failing, and also the poor state of the economy they blamed on Bill Clinton over the last 2 years. So
George W. Himself has brought that up, and Bill Clinton shot back, look, I didn't blame your father for the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia. I didn't kick him after he left office. Don't kick me.
Right. But it really depends on the nature of the product. If he's on a major network during the day, it'll have to be the type of show that would draw a huge audience. If he focuses too many times on problems of genocide in the third world, if he focuses on really important international issues, it may drive the audience away. And if he interviews Pamela Anderson too many times, that may hurt some of his other supporters. So it really depends on the nature of the product. But I think obviously, there's a market there for this.
Oprah pulls in $125 million a year, we read. Maybe there's room for a Bill Clinton pulling in. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Steve's calling from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yes. My question has got to do, I guess, with a lot of different things. You're talking about the nature of the product, and I think that's pretty important. I think the spokesperson in this situation is even more important. Oprah has a show, she has a following, she has an audience. Is the audience of this product in question, maybe should it be handled at all? Does this show undermine the authority of the current administration, future administrations, or the office in general?
Now, that is a great question, Stephen. Let me put it to our guest. Daryl West, this is right on the money of your book, and Steve, thank you so much for raising it. But in an era where there are many microphones, not only the podium at the White House, there are a lot of bully pulpits, and they're powerful ones. Is it possible? Does celebrity politics, as you describe it, rise to such a level, especially in the hands of an ex-president, that it could challenge the authority or the guiding hand of a sitting president?
A Clinton talk show could create major problems for a Bush presidency, just in the sense that it would give the former president an incredible platform by which to talk about public issues. But former presidents typically stay off certain kinds of issues. You know, they generally don't intervene and comment too much on foreign policy or national security issues, because there the argument is, you know, the country needs to speak with one voice. You can't have too many internal divisions, and that would undermine the president. So I don't think
wouldn't be much of a lively talk show host in an era of terrorism and potential war in Iraq if he's not talking about national security and foreign policy.
Well,
he might have to break that boundary, don't you think, to be effective, to have anybody come and listen.
He might have to break the boundary in that type of situation, but it's more common for former presidents to stick to other types of issues, domestic issues, economic issues, tax issues, and so on. And when you think about former presidents who've criticized current presidents, it has tended to be more on domestic than foreign policy.
Well, there's no denying that's been the history. But Jack Beatty, maybe this is a kind of a boundary-breaking president who would break that boundary as well. I mean, it really is hard to imagine him seriously taking up this role if he's not going to take on the central issues of the country.
Yeah, I can't imagine that either. Just the logic of the show, and of course his producers would be saying, hey, wait a minute, we're at war. You've got to talk about this. But, you know, it was said about Teddy Roosevelt that he had to be the center of attention at anything. Even at weddings, they said he wanted to be the bride and groom, and at funerals, he wanted to be the corpse. And I think Bill Clinton is going to have a heck of a time. If this is going to be a talk show, other people are going to have to talk. What a burden that is going to be for Bill Clinton.
That could be tough. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Mark is on the line. Hi, Mike. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to make two quick points. One is that I think a lot of what the outcome of this would be hinges on whether or not the networks and the producers have the chutzpah to actually craft a substantive program. If they're just going to go for ratings and look for more and more, you know, Coke and Britney Spears ads, then, you know, I think it's probably doomed from the start. But, you know, Bill Clinton, regardless of his failings, is still an incredibly intelligent man. He's a very good leader. He's very charismatic. I think he's got a lot to offer our society still, and hopefully for a very long time. And if they can come up with a way to do it that is substantive, I think it would be a phenomenal thing.
Mark, I'm hearing this positive surge. The callers are saying bring him on. Do you blame Bill Clinton for any of the pickles that we're in now, for security lapses that left us open to September 11th, for a bubble economy that burst all over George W.'s head? Do you look back on those things and say, wow, he was a good talker, but look what we ended up with?
No, I think that would be far too simplistic. Most of these issues are far more complicated than something that can be wrapped up in a soundbite of it's his fault or it's your fault or my fault or any of that sort of thing. And actually, that's the point, is that I would like to see him get into the public debate more so that we could maybe get past the nastiness that seems to prevail and actually have a conversation about what works and what doesn't and why and what Americans need to know more about and understanding how the UN actually works and how the economy really works and how the SEC has a role in government and in how that a little bit more about exactly what, you know, is going on. And I think, you know, it would be really nice to elevate the discussion above the, you know, sort of tabloid tone that's prevalent in the media.
So there's the magnetism again of that old Clinton brain and grasp of policy, and Mark's voting to see it even on afternoon television. Mark, thank you for your call. Jack Beatty, there's this constant issue of Bill Clinton's legacy and how well it has stood up. That would clearly be brought front and center again if he steps out in such a public role. Could even be changed or burnished or I suppose even diminished by a role as a talk show host. But how do you see that Clinton legacy standing right now?
Well, you know, if you compare him to the progressive presidents of the century, I think the answer has to be that there's a very little legacy. And I define a legacy as in terms of magnitude, universal programs that will affect all Americans for all time, are permanent institutions that will be in American public life for all time. Wilson, you know, the Federal Reserve Bank alone, but many other things. FDR could take us half the night. Lyndon Johnson, Medicare, civil rights, aid to education, you know, federal aid to education, on and on and on. All Americans for all time. Bill Clinton had his moment, and Darrell West has written very, very well about it, in healthcare, and partly because of his own failings and largely because of the massive lobbying campaign by private special interests, healthcare for all Americans was turned down. That was his shot. at a universal program, at a legacy for all Americans for all time. He lost it. And thereafter, he did a kind of boutique politics. He did something for this group and that group, but no fundamental, big, universal program that really defines the progressive presidents.
Daryl West, how about it? Do you agree? Do you see Bill Clinton as more a pioneer of a new dynamic of the presidency than a substantial legacy? What is your view?
I do think Clinton had an incredible opportunity in his presidency and for whatever reason was not able to pull off the health care thing. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, is going to motivate him in his post-presidency. You know, he's going to have the longest post-presidency period probably of any former president, given his relative youth. You know, he could be active in public affairs for 30 years now. And I think part of what he would like to do is to cement the legacy, to overcome some of the obvious problems of his presidency, the health care failure, the adultery issue as well, and create this new legacy for him such that he can redeem himself in the minds of voters as well as historians.
John Norman, do you see the possibility there? Do you think Bill Clinton sees the possibility there of working through more time in the media to erase the negatives and pump up the positives?
Yes, I think Clinton's always had an eye to presidential greatness. He always would like to have a chance to do some historical revisionism and then pull his ratings up. In my lifetime, I think Clinton was the second greatest Republican president. Eisenhower would be the first, and then Clinton would be the second. Unfortunately, you tell me that he's a Democrat, so I have to redo my evaluations. Mm-hmm. But Clinton could be able to use this opportunity as the talk show president. He ran it for 8 years. He was almost like the MC of America. If he had this huge show on one of the large networks that would compete with an Oprah-type show, and if he got good ratings, it could help a little bit in the post-presidential ratings. But I think the person who's got a lock on helping do the most during his post-presidential ratings to try to bring up his image would be Jimmy Carter. The type of things that he has worked on just would way outclass hosting a TV talk show.
But are they – now, that's an interesting question. Jimmy Carter has gone to the humble, by and large, to the swinging the hammer for Habitat for Humanity, going out and watching elections in other countries for democratic process. Which do you think is ultimately more effective? Is Jimmy Carter, Jack Beatty, the moral inspiration? Can Bill Clinton really be as significant an inspiration with a talk show microphone?
I don't know. It's very hard to measure that. I mean, mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter, I think, has become in his post-presidency a bigger figure than he was as president, where he really was sort of overwhelmed by events and by his own political limitations. So he has grown, you might say, out of office. But this may be Clinton may have sized that up and said, you know, I can't do that. Carter has got that franchise. I can't do the humanitarian. But I can do the public educator. And that's what Franklin Roosevelt said presidents do. He says presidents educate. And where that's – if you were to say what is George Bush's main weakness as a president as opposed to his policies, he does not educate people.
Maybe Bill Clinton will. Maybe he's listening out on Martha's Vineyard. Do you still look to Bill Clinton? Would you look to him for thinking about how to deal with our national and world challenges? Or are you so over this man? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Bill Clinton reduction, the remaking of a president. What kind of ex-president do you want Bill Clinton to be? Can you see him as a new Oprah? Do you want to see that? What impact can, should, will Bill Clinton have with the rest of his life? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Professor John Orman and Professor Daryl West, co-authors of the new book, Celebrity Politics, and by an awful lot of listeners who want to join the conversation. Jim in Waterford, Pennsylvania, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, or good evening, rather. Something more important than whether they can come up with enough money to satisfy Bill or if, you know, everything goes is, do you feel that the sponsors are willing to step into this? We've seen shortly after he left office, he was in some certain speaking engagements, and just in those organizations created a lot of havoc because of the divide that is in this country over Bill Clinton. Either you love him or you hate him, and the people that hate him, myself being one of them, If I seen a sponsor sponsoring his show,
it's not going to encourage you.
I would run the other direction.
We'll address that question, Jim, but let us ask you, what is it about Bill Clinton that's still under your skin rubbing you all wrong?
Well, just about everything he said or did. I mean, the reason we have these problems with the terrorism is because his lack of action. The problems we've got with China now, you know, everything that he did through his whole administration, I was pretty much opposed to. I can't think of one thing that he did that I appreciated as he was president.
So it's not going to make any friend of you to the network that puts him on. Jim, thank you for your call. John Orman, let me put it to you. Is Bill Clinton, he left office, we have to grant, with, I think, the highest ratings in the history of the presidency, something like 66% positive ratings. Of course, then they took a steep dive because of the pardons, the very controversial pardons that he signed just at the end of his presidency. And we know, as our caller Jim points out, that he was very divisive in spite of the many people who are very high on him. Has he, in the interval since he left the presidency, become mainstream enough that he would not have people boycotting, refusing to sponsor, all that?
Well, I'm sure it'd be a very controversial move for some, but for network executives who are looking for a possible runaway hit during the daytime, it's worth enough of a gamble, and certainly there would be sponsors out there who would sponsor something like this. One thing it would do, though, in our talk show universe, I think there's a real paucity of even modestly liberal views on the air. The talking heads, I watched a debate the other night between the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute on whether we should go to war on Iraq.
That's a fine line debate.
Yeah, and at least, I mean, I know one network thought that Phil Donahue's show would come back and save that network, but it hasn't done that.
Seems to be having some trouble.
Yes, and Clinton may have a rough road to go in the long run, but I'm sure if this ever got on the television, it would be huge ratings the first week or so. It might turn out to be the Magic Johnson show and go off the air. But on the other hand, I think it would have I can think of many sponsors who'd be willing to line up for the show.
But you said something very interesting, and it's patently true. Just look at the talk shows and you can see it. But why is it in a country where Bill Clinton, for example, has such high ratings that conservative talk shows are so dominant?
I'll let Daryl take that one. Daryl's written lot on the mass media.
Well, when you look at the classic talk show demographic, it tends to be older males who are more conservative. And I think one of the attractions of a Clinton talk show is it would break that model and provide an opportunity to reach out to a lot of other types of audiences, people who generally don't tune in to afternoon television. You know, it's no longer just a housewives market, but, you know, they're young kids. And television networks are desperate to reach that youth audience because obviously they see that as a future. And, you know, your caller pointed out that Clinton would be very controversial but, you know, there's nothing better for ratings than controversy.
But to this point of the absence of liberal talk show hosts, what do you think drives that?
Oftentimes, to have a successful radio talk show, you need outrage. And people who are opposed to government, don't like members of Congress getting a big pay raise or upset at this program or that program, it's much easier to generate a following among that. There have been several liberal hosts, Mario Cuomo among them, who've tried that medium and basically have failed. But Clinton is someone who has that populist edge who can actually generate controversy and build an audience and direct the outrage.
Boy, it's hard to see a man with as smooth a tongue as Bill Clinton, as persuasive and smart on the issues, addressing those issues, raising that controversy without becoming a real player at some level in directing the national political conversation. Tony's on the line. Welcome, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi. I did not vote for Bill Clinton.
All right.
Either time. So I'm not a real big Clinton supporter,
okay.
But I would like to see him on the air because I think there is such a scarcity of people to respond to and take on this ridiculous right-wing shenanigans that are going on.
What issues would you like to see raised that are not being generally raised on national television, Tony?
We have got American citizens in jail and they're not being charged and they're being held incommunicado. I think that's dangerous and ridiculous. We've got a president who thinks that he should go to war and then explain to the people why when those actions could very well light a fuse that could turn into a conflagration that's going to come here and burn a lot of Americans. That C student in the White House is going to kill a lot of people. and we're not even supposed to get an opportunity to speak on as to whether or not we should do these things.
Tony, those issues that you raise go right to the heart of really burning current issues. Do you feel that it would be appropriate for a former president who just stepped out of office less than 2 years ago to go right at those? Would that be appropriate?
The only reason we're even asking the question is because for some reason, well, for reasons I won't go into, basically what has happened, and I guess this addresses the last question you asked your guest, why are there so few left-leaning voices on the media? Basically, the media is owned by the right, in spite of what they would like to tell you about the big media being liberal and all that sort of stuff. The fact is, the right wing is a far better, they're far better propagandists than the left, and their goals are much easier. They know exactly what they want. It's very concrete and tangible. They want all the power, and they want all the money, and we're just supposed to sit back and say nothing.
Tony, we hear you. Thank you for your call. Jack Beatty, here it's raised, and it comes up repeatedly, callers saying, yeah, we want Bill Clinton to get in there, and quite apart from the tradition of ex-presidents sort of taking a back seat, we want him to jump right into the middle of the big issues. That would be a new world. You defeat the Democrats. Bill Clinton leaves the White House and steps right up to another bully pulpit that may even be bigger than the one in the West Wing.
Yeah, wouldn't that be? That would be unprecedented. But Clinton has an appetite for doing things that are unprecedented. You know, what do you wear? Briefs or boxers? I mean, whatever it is, he's up for the challenge. So I think that he and I think that the question that Jim raised is that. The Tony raised is really a good one. I mean, there is nobody in the public airwaves who is not either, who is even rational. Let's put it that way. I don't think it's left or right. I think Bill Clinton, by the way, is the least ideological thinker we've ever had as president. He's an on the one hand, on the other hand, let's look at this. He could give such an example in thinking. I think people would come away exploring the complexity of issues without any necessarily Clinton stamp on what to do.
Boy, it would be a fascinating new world with a bully pulpit in the hands of an articulate ex-president. Ken's calling from Hampton, New Hampshire. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, do your guests think that Bill Clinton being on a television show where he has great public exposure, would his charisma detract from the Democratic Party overall? At the moment, my sense is that there's not anybody in the Democratic Party with anything like Bill Clinton's charisma. So if he's promoting more or less his agenda through a talk show, could he damage the Democratic Party?
Great question. John Orman, what about it? If Bill Clinton stands up straight, does he make the other Democrats that his should-be successors look small?
It might happen, except for the fact, as you know, Clinton cannot run for another term. We have Hillary in the wings waiting. We have a crop of Democrats for the 2004 election that have been showing up in New Hampshire and other places.
But I don't think Ken is talking about him stepping in. We know he can't go back to the White House, but might he just by standing up, you know, with all his mellifluous facility with the issues, with such a big forum, just make them look small by comparison, even if he's obviously not running for the White House?
Except there is a group of hardcore Democrats who would like to see leadership in terms of probably what liberal Democrats used to think were very progressive terms. And so with Bill Clinton saying different policy stands, one side this, one side that, there's a real group of real political players who are going to try to get that nomination. So no matter which way Clinton goes, I don't think it's going to demean the Democratic nominee or the people who are trying to get the nomination in 2004.
Darrell West, do you agree? I mean, part of the thrust of your book is to say we're outside the bounds of the old party organizations, the old political lines here. Celebrity political power works at a different level. Might this man not overshadow his own party? He's willing to overshadow progressive wings of the party in the past, certainly.
Well, I think the risk in this celebrity-dominated political system is that celebrities suck up all the oxygen and all the airwaves, and the conventional politicians just don't have the star power to compete with them. And so, you know, if I were a Democratic nominee out there, I'd be worried about Clinton having too much of a public presence, just in terms of the potential distraction that would impose. And it's an interesting question that Ken raised. I mean, earlier we were talking about whether a Clinton presence would be damaging to the sitting president, mm-hmm. George Bush, mm-hmm. it also could be equally problematic for the Democratic nominee or other Democratic leaders in Congress.
And again, a signal of how it could be a shift into a new kind of political realm and dynamic, really the media age upon us. Kurt's calling from Oconto, Wisconsin. Hi, Kurt. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Excellent discussion. I think it's the worst thing that could possibly happen. I don't care if it's I can't stand Bill Clinton, but I don't think any ex-president should have that kind of a pulpit to go before the American people and undermine the current administration, whether it be Democratic or Republican.
And exactly why, Kurt? Why do you think that?
Because we do need one leader. And a person like Bill Clinton isn't going to give that up. He's going to challenge the credit.
Kurt, your line is breaking up, and I'm sorry for it, but you raise a really interesting point, Jack Beatty, and it's what we've been kind of dancing around here or come to in this hour, the possibility, and maybe we're giving this man way too much credit, but the possibility, given the power of media, that you would have two suns in the sky, that you would have two power centers in the nation. It's kind of the thesis of the book that our guests have tonight, and here's a caller who doesn't like Bill Clinton but imagines that it could happen.
Yeah, well, that's a very good – I mean, I can certainly imagine the White House feeling that this wouldn't be fair. And if there's another president coming along, the Clinton was on the show, they wouldn't either. But, you know, you could imagine – he's obviously aware of that. And I can imagine that he is parsing this as he parses everything, you know, very finely. And that, you know, he's talking – my guess is that he'd be talking about, as I said before, a kind of educating show where he's going to have a guest from the right. He's going to have a guest from the left. They're going to be the top. Imagine the guests he can get, anybody, Tony Blair, you name it, and they're going to talk through policy stuff. And I think it's going to be much more like school than it is going to be like, crossfire.
Maybe. But, you know, even the best teacher teaches all sides but ends up leaving some kind of message here. This isn't a dry teacher. This is a hyper-skilled politician who would be leading right and left-wing guests through the paces. I mean, you know how he can end up setting them up. I'm reading today in Reuters, Clinton friends saying the show has to be entertaining. They know that, but, quote, he's also smart enough to understand that he could never do a show that would demean the presidency and that he could never do a partisan political show. But I wonder, is that really possible, Darrell West, for someone like Bill Clinton to be on with that kind of microphone reach and not do a partisan political show?
Well, the political shows today that are successful tend to have an edge. The O'Reilly Factor, Chris Matthews, Hardball. I mean, these are hosts that don't sit back. They're not shrinking violets. I mean, they're out front. They take clear stands.
And those are the shows that poll. They're the ones that have the big audience.
Yes, and they tend to really aggravate people. The only exception to that really is Oprah, who's kind of, you know, in a world of her own, who she does cross demographics. She crosses political lines. I mean, she draws from a wide variety of Americans.
Our time has run out, and I'm sorry. We had a lot of callers we didn't get to, but John Orman, professor of politics at Fairfield University in Connecticut, and Darrell West, professor of political science at Brown University in Providence, thank you both for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
John Orman and Darrell West are co-authors of the new book, Celebrity Politics. Jack Beatty, you can only wonder if Bill Clinton has put this up as a trial balloon. You can only imagine that in some degree it is. The New York Times says the concept of Bill Clinton talk show sounds not so much like a good idea or a bad idea, but an inevitable idea.
Yes, and I can imagine one of the sponsors, and I won't say who it is, except it's a drug company, and that the baseball player Rafael Palmeiro is in its ads.
Oh, no. Don't be signing any last-minute pardons on me now, Jack. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online, log on to onpointradio.org and click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR.